everybody. Good evening. Matthew Collar in here for Henry Lake tonight. Also will be in on Friday night for the next couple of hours. Hope you're all doing well and maybe getting out the cold weather gear. I got to tell you, that Twitter account that has all the Minneapolis weather, it's a real troll. Just sends out all the bad news all the time, and there's going to be, it looks like, quite a bit of it over the next few days. But at least for now, we're doing fine, and we have a lot to discuss. And a lot of it will be sports this evening, although I do want to share something that my family has been doing for Christmas that I would love some reaction to. We'll get to that at some point. But I want to start off, because if you have not heard me on the air before, on either Thursday nights with Henry Lake or on Fridays with Chad Hartman, I cover the Minnesota Vikings for Purple Insider. And so I want to talk a little bit about the Vikings. There's only one place to really start the conversation, which is with Sam Darnold, coming off of an incredible performance against the Atlanta Falcons. And all I see now everywhere is a discussion about Sam Darnold. But that discussion is not about how good Sam Darnold has been or how the Vikings have a legitimate chance to win the Super Bowl with Sam Darnold and how he matches up against the other playoff teams and what he's going to do over the next 4 weeks. Monday Night Football, Sam Darnold against the Chicago Bears. Here we go. How exciting is this? 11-2. No. That is not the discussion. The discussion is about Sam Darnold's future with the Minnesota Vikings. And I want to start with a public service announcement for a couple things, but we'll start with Darnold. My public service announcement to you is to not get completely caught up in whether Sam Darnold will be the quarterback in the future. Because the Minnesota Vikings are 11-2. And when you look around the NFC and you go, well, who's way better? The Lions are good, but the Vikings lost to them by 2. The Eagles are good. My understanding is their wide receiver and quarterback are fighting, and they just barely beat the Carolina Panthers last week. They're not perfect. Who else? The Packers? They're pretty good. Vikings beat the Packers. Other teams in the NFC, they lost to the Rams. Would be a little concerned about the Rams. Seattle's pretty good, but are any of these teams significantly better than the Minnesota Vikings? No. They're going to have 4 more games to prove it. But even if they go 2-2, they will tie 2017, 2009 for wins. It will be one of the best seasons that the Vikings have had in the last 20 years. And we will have spent the entire month leading up to the playoffs for one of the most exciting seasons and successful seasons that they have had in 20 years, only arguing about the guy's future, only arguing about next year. What are they going to do? Rookie contracts. Can you pay Darnold? Is he really that good? Ah, loud noises. You don't have to do it. You don't have to do it. You don't have to go to work every day and argue with your coworkers about whether Darnold should get paid. You don't have to go online every evening and fight with everyone on the internet about whether Sam Darnold is going to be the quarterback of the future, because your football team is 11-2. You can live in the moment. You can enjoy a great season. You can have a grand time tuning into Monday Night Football to watch them play the Bears and just live it. Just live that you have a legitimate football team. Because how many years did we spend, and I have covered the team since 2016, how many years did we spend during the Kirk Cousins era watching them be a 500 type team, never really good enough? Kirk, not the type of quarterback who could ever get you over the top. Always arguing about what the reasons were around Kirk Cousins that kept them from getting to the top. Well, they didn't have a good enough right guard. Well, you know, they didn't draft the right cornerback, all that stuff, and they were 500. And then when they had a good season, they had a negative point differential. They got blown out in the big games down the stretch, and we knew going into the playoffs they couldn't really do it. This team's two losses have come by a total of 12 points. They are plus 99 on the season, almost having beat their opponents by 100 points. And the other thing is, too, in the NFC, there isn't a Drew Brees. There isn't an Aaron Rodgers. There are no other quarterbacks or teams that you would say, oh my gosh, they're perfect. The Lions are better, but are they crazy better? Half their defense is hurt. Their quarterback has his flaws. He's not the biggest playmaker. Last year in the biggest moment, they took a risk on a fourth down and they made a mistake and then they gave up a bunch of points and they didn't go to the Super Bowl. So the Lions have their flaws as well. The Vikings played them really closely in that game at US Bank Stadium, and they're going to play again at the end of the season. All of this stuff can be the focus of what they're going to do here going forward, how they're going to match up with the next team, what it means for playoff position, who they're going to play in the playoffs, what the path can be like. And going into it, knowing you have a quarterback who can make a play like the 52-yard touchdown to Justin Jefferson, it feels like shackles have been thrown off of this franchise that were on it with the mediocre quarterback that they had for a long time. So you don't have to spend every quarter. I saw this the other day. The first quarter, Darnold gets sacked a couple times, and they're down 7-0, I think. It's like, oh, he can't be the guy. He just can't be the guy. And then he comes back and has one of the great games in Vikings history. But you don't have to spend every quarter, every three and out, every mistake that he makes. I'm sure there will be another interception by the end of the season. Wondering, are they really going to pay this guy? Are we really going to chain our franchise to this guy who was bad 8 years ago with the Jets? Wasn't 8 years ago, but it was a while ago. A long time ago with the Jets. You don't have to do it. You could just watch a really good football team that is incredibly exciting, that has two of the best receivers in the league, that has one of the best coaches in the league, has a lot of talent on defense. I'm a little concerned about how they've played defensively over the last couple weeks. And let me share another secret with you. You also don't have to be that afraid if, for some reason, the Vikings ended up paying Sam Darnold. You don't have to be terrified if he, over these next few weeks, convinces the organization that he should be their guy going forward. Number one, there's a thing called the franchise tag, which means that they can just have him for next year without giving him a long-term contract. And also, if you look around the league, the other teams that are in the playoffs or in the playoff race, in the hunt for the Super Bowl, have paid their quarterbacks. The Philadelphia Eagles gave Jalen Hurts a big contract. Seattle paid Geno Smith after his one good year. They're 8-5. They're a winning team. They're tough. I'm going to Seattle, next week to see the Vikings cover the game in Seattle. They paid their quarterback. Their franchise didn't fall into the Pacific Ocean. How about the Rams? Matthew Stafford. That guy's been on a big contract for years. They won the Super Bowl. They're a pretty good team right now. Detroit paid Jared Goff. They're okay. Last year, Baker Mayfield was paid $4 million, took his team to the playoffs. They gave him an extension in Tampa Bay. They're number one in the division. Just paying someone doesn't automatically mean your team stinks suddenly. The Vikings have a lot of talent under contract. There's a lot of buttons that they can push if they need to keep Sam Darnold long term. I think Kirk Cousins, because we talked about it so much, well, if you pay Kirk Cousins, you can't build out the rest of the team. Well, that was sort of true. But the first 2 years of Kirk Cousins, they were able to keep all of their talent. He just let them down. The whole 2017 team came back in 2018, and he just didn't play well enough. Once again, it was whose fault is it anyway? Is it Mike Zimmer not wanting them to sign him? Was it getting the wrong offensive coordinator? But I think I think it was more about the fact that you didn't have a quarterback who could be a playmaker, who could do something special, who had an elite arm like Sam Darnold has. When we go through these quarterbacks that are paid, they all have some sort of thing that they do that makes them exceptional. Jalen Hurts can run. Geno Smith and Matt Stafford have big arms. Jared Goff's got the great offense around him, and he's got a great arm, and he was drafted number one. Baker Mayfield, big arm, drafted number one. These teams have great receivers. The skill matters. The player matters for whether you're paying him. And the NFL's salary cap system is also set up for anybody who wants to push money down the road to create winning windows, that the Vikings can always tag Sam Darnold. And then if he doesn't play well the following season, go to J.J. McCarthy and go back to the regular plan, and it will be fine. And if that's the way that they do it, McCarthy will be at the ripe old age of 23. The Green Bay Packers did exactly this with Aaron Rodgers. When they drafted Jordan Love in 2020, they had no idea that Aaron Rodgers was about to be the MVP of the league two straight years because he hadn't played well the previous season. So they thought, well, we'll probably play Rodgers for one more year and then move on to Love. And things changed, and they just developed Love for two more years. And now they're a good team. And they should have beat the Lions the other day, and they should be right there in the playoffs. I mean, they are right there in the playoffs, but they should even have a better record if they had pulled off that game. They pay Jordan Love. It wasn't the end of the earth. They didn't have to sell the franchise immediately. They just had a good players around him and good coaching, and they made up some of the difference. Like, the Vikings seem to find undrafted free agents left and right. I don't know. They've got these guys under contract. Grenard, Van Ginkle, Cashman, Jefferson. Darisaw's going to come back. O'Neal. Jordan Addison's on his rookie contract. They will not have to suddenly sacrifice signing players, because you could sign players to smaller deals that get bigger down the road. So you don't have to be terrified that Darnold's going to play so well that you don't get your dream rookie contract. It's really a pretty good problem to have if he reaches that bar. And the bar was always set extremely high, and he has reached it. He has played incredible football for this team. And if he keeps playing it that well, just allow yourself to appreciate that you have a super stupid talented quarterback who's winning you a bunch of games. So that's the PSA. That's PSA part one. I've got another one when we come back from the break. But PSA part one is, you can live in the moment. You can enjoy Sam Darnold. You can be happy for Sam Darnold. This guy was left for dead in the NFL and yet has found a way to fight back. He's one of the great stories in the league. And yet we've been so off-season pilled. Like, we must talk about front office and off-season and salary caps and future. Ah! We must watch yelly shows on TV that argue about this all day long. We don't have to do it. They're going to play the Bears on Monday night. We're going to go from there and see what they do. And then there's an offseason to decide and argue about all this. Matthew Collar in for Henry Lake. I'll give you another Vikings PSA when we return.
In my mind, I would hope he would kind of say, hey, the body of work that I've put in so far is going to take care of the future. So really all I need to worry about is right now. You know, I think we all know that, you know, Sam is going to be a sought after type of guy from wherever that may be. So whatever his future ends up being is I know all of us in this building are going to be happy for him no matter where that ends up being. So I don't think he has to worry about that anymore. I think the worry might have been, okay, this is my opportunity to play. All right. He's passed all that. He's proven the doubters, and he's proven that he can play in this league. So let's just make this the best possible season we can have, and starting this week.
Wes Phillips there, Minnesota Vikings offensive coordinator, talking about Sam Darnold, and certainly raised a little bit of an eyebrow when he said, wherever that may be, not trying to talk around it. Wes Phillips, a rather straightforward person, so not trying to pretend that it's a lock that Sam Darnold will be back, even though he is 11-3 and has the third highest quarterback rating in the NFL. Allison sent in the text at 651-461-9226 and says, I have thought briefly about what we're going to do with J.J. McCarthy when he is healthy. So there's a few different ways they could approach it. If you keep Sam Darnold after this year on a one-year contract, which is just the franchise tag, and there's nothing that the player can do about it. Dak Prescott played on the franchise tag last year. It just is what it is. It's one of the things that the teams are able to use is a franchise tag. then they could develop J.J. McCarthy for another year and just spread out the sample size of what happens with Sam Darnold. They could also trade J.J. McCarthy if Sam Darnold is just incredible. Because the thing about Sam Darnold that's so unique, that deviates from any other time this has happened in Vikings history, and it's happened many times, but if we go back to the last time it was somebody surprisingly emerging, well, that was Case Keenum. And Case Keenum, we all knew, was an undrafted or seventh rounder, I think undrafted, quarterback who had been a backup and was 6 foot tall and needed miracles and got them for a single season. But nobody thought, whoa, this is a guy who looks like a franchise quarterback. We all thought he's kind of throwing it up in the air for grabs and lucking out a little bit. Didn't have the accuracy, didn't have the arm strength, and just had a great season with a really good team with the number one defense. And then the time before that, it was Brett Favre. And Brett Favre was very old when it happened. And they tried to bring him back, and it turned out he got really, really old really, really fast in 2010. But he was, what, 39 or 40 years old by the time that he got here, 41, something like that. Before that, it was Jeff George, 1999. But Jeff George had been around multiple teams. They had drafted Dante Culpepper. George was pretty good, but he wasn't unbelievable. And then before that, Randall Cunningham. But Randall Cunningham had slipped after 1998. That's how they ended up with Jeff George. And they drafted Culpepper knowing that Cunningham had already been retired once and was on the older side. So all of these guys had been on the older side and played a bunch of football before they arrived here and had their pop-up type of seasons. Sam Darnold had played with the horrific New York Jets and did not have a lot of success there, had a bad season in Carolina, then had a good run in Carolina for six games where he won four of them. And that was one of the things that convinced Kevin O'Connell that he wanted him to play here. But if you go back and look at those teams that Sam Darnold started his career with, the coaches are no longer in the league. Most of the players from just a couple years ago are no longer in the league. I mean, Adam Gase never got another job as a coach in the NFL. Matt Rhule, his coach in Carolina, never got another job in the NFL. These guys were very, very bad at what they did. And then when he played in San Francisco, briefly, he played really well. When he played at the end of the season in 2022 without Matt Rhule as his coach, he played pretty well. And now the entire season, what I didn't expect from Sam Darnold was it to be as consistent as it's been. If we can all remember immediately the one bad game that he had in Jacksonville, that's pretty good. Most quarterbacks have more than one or two. I guess he wasn't that great against the Jets. I gave him a pass for London, and Jets have a pretty good defense. But if those are the only bad games for a season, that's been very consistent play. And we've seen it happen on the back of things that got him drafted at the top. There are lots of quarterbacks throughout history who need time to become who they're going to be and need to be with the right organization. But it's not like anything's changing for the organization on offense. Jefferson isn't going anywhere. Addison is not going anywhere as long as he can behave himself in the offseason. The coach is definitely not going anywhere after this year. There's going to be, I'm sure, a huge contract extension for Kevin O'Connell. So you can better project what Darnold's going to be. But this, the difference is that he's young. He's 27 years old, and this is what he was always supposed to be. It's not like Case Keenum, who was always supposed to be a backup that had everything work out for a single season. The other PSA, so my first segment PSA was, hey, you just don't have to spend your life over the next 4 weeks and into the playoffs arguing with everybody about signing Darnold. It's interesting. I'm not saying don't talk about it. I'm saying that, like, remember, don't lose sight of how interesting this is and how exciting it is to have a football team that is one of the top five, six teams in the NFL going into the playoffs. The Vikings have not had that very often throughout the last 20 years. So live in the moment a little bit. That's number one. The other thing is, too, every time I talk about how good the team is, and I'm always driven by the stats, the numbers, what I see covering the team all the time, covering every game, And I think they're pretty darn good. I don't think they're perfect, but I don't think anybody in the NFC is perfect. I think they have played with everybody. They've somewhat played down to some teams. They blew out the Falcons by 3 scores. They blew out the Texans earlier this year by 3 scores. The Falcons were the top team in their division until the other day. So they've put together a very, very good season that puts you right there in the doorstep. And yet, every time I talk about it, you guys already know what the response is, right? You already know. In fact, you're pulling out your phone and ready to text on the text line to me right now that in 1998 they missed a kick wide left. I know. I know Blair Walsh missed one. I was there in Philadelphia when Case Keenum got blown out. I am very aware of all the things that have gone wrong for the Minnesota Vikings over the years. That's the other thing you don't have to do. You don't have to spend this entire December into January thinking about all the hilarious or bizarre ways that your team can lose. They probably will. They probably will not win the Super Bowl because most teams probably will not win the Super Bowl. Only 1 out of 32 makes it. Everybody else goes home very sad. But I think we've gone past the point, to the point of near absurdity when it comes to every single time the Vikings fall behind in a game, we have to talk about all the times that they've disappointed the fan base. And with every win, it gets closer to them missing a field goal to lose a game in the playoffs or something. I know. I understand how much everyone has been harmed by this franchise over the years. Make it a New Year's resolution to not bring up Gary Anderson for once in your life when your team is good. I was 12 when that happened. It's a long, long time ago. Try to enjoy the ride. Life is hard. There's a lot of things happen that are crazy in the world that are pretty unfortunate. Your football team being good should be a time for you to be excited about it and interested in it and want to follow it and see what happens. Not a time to complain about how they're probably going to not win the Super Bowl. I know that's a tough one, but that's my Vikings PSA. Now, we're going to talk about something that is not sad or dark at all, which is the Gophers basketball team. Actually, we'll also talk about Gophers football as well with Andy Greeter of the Pioneer Press when we return. Matthew Collar in for Henry Lake. All right, welcome back here into WCCO. Matthew Collar in for Henry Lake tonight. And joining me on the show from the Pioneer Press, covers the Gophers, Andy Greeter. What is going on, Andy? How are you?
I'm good, Collar. How are you?
Oh, well, I was doing better until I heard it was going to go down below zero. That made me maybe displeased. Maybe I will have to make plans to travel to the Duke's Mayo Bowl to warm up. Where is the Duke's Mayo Bowl, by the way?
It's in Charlotte. Not exactly tropical. When I talked with their executive director earlier this week, and he was rubbing it in that it's 60 degrees there.
Okay. Well, this certainly is better than what we've got going for ourselves. You know what? I think, Andy, as the Gophers are going to play in the Duke's Mayo Bowl, and I am envisioning PJ Fleck being covered with mayo, thinking, yeah, this makes sense, actually. He's a coach that works for. That overall, now that it's over, and there were some bumps along the way and some disappointments along the way, this was a really important season for PJ Fleck, and I think at the end of the day, a very good season for confidence in PJ Fleck going forward. Would you agree with that?
I would. He's never had 2 straight losing seasons, and he was in danger of doing that going into this year, given their 5-6, 5-7 regular season a year ago. The broader perspective is, you know, Vegas had him at 5.5 wins going into the year. So for them to be able to get to 7 and win a rivalry game against the Badgers and, you know, have something in their trophy case, because they were in danger of not having any of their, you know, 4 rivalry trophies, 2 in particular being the Floyd Rosedale and the Paul Bunyan Dax. I think it's important to be able to get to 7. You know, I think if they were 6-6 and they lost the Axe game, I think you'd be looking at maybe some more disgruntled fans. But anytime you're able to get at least one of the rivalries, I think it's encouraging. Now, I think you can also look at it and say, you know, they had 4 one-score losses, and if a couple of those go their way, you know, then they're maybe looking at a Florida Bowl. So there were all other opportunities that they left kind of on the table that made you thinking, especially after they took care of Wisconsin in the way that they did, that there should have been even more wins on the table for them.
Yeah, and the point about how they lost those games is important because certainly you could blame PJ for maybe trying to throw a pass to the tackle, which did Kevin O'Connell and PJ get together and design their horrible trick plays maybe over dinner or something? But you lose to Michigan, and maybe you kind of get screwed there by the refs. You barely lose to Penn State, who we know is a great team and lived in the top 10 pretty much all season long. That matters, too, because going into this season, I didn't really know what to expect, Andy. I thought with the Big Ten having so many changes, the Gophers might just be left behind. But this year, they were playing with anybody that came out.
For sure, for sure. I think you look at that Michigan game and seeing the fact that they got called for offside and the onside kick, and then the Big Ten comes back and changes the referee mechanics based on that call. Mm-hmm. Your head of officials say that it was too close to call. It was a bitter pill with that one, but at the same time, they still needed to drive down on a Michigan defense that's loaded with future NFL players. So that one was a little bit, you know, more iffy for me. The Rutgers game obviously stands out with mm-hmm. you when you're fumbling within the shadow of your own goalposts late in that game. That was a very winnable game. And then obviously way back in August against a mediocre North Carolina team that, you know, fired Mack Brown and I think went 6-6. You had a shot to win that with a field goal at the end. So there were those 4 games, like we talked about, that were right there for the Gophers that could have taken, like I said, a good season, a successful season, and made it even better.
No, you're right. Even if they win 2 of those, then we're even having a different conversation. But you could still walk away and say they were either winning or just barely finding a way to lose games, which is a lot better than having a miserable, terrible season where they're getting blown out or struggling. In a world where everybody is paying their football players $1 million to come to their universities, like where do the Gophers exist in that universe now? Because things have changed for PJ Fleck so much in such a short period of time.
Yeah, you know, I was on these airwaves 2 weeks ago with Dave Schwartz and Paul Najarian, and they were asking me about, you know, some of the likely suspects of are they going to enter the transfer portal, and Coy Parrish, who was a All Big Ten safety, and Darius Taylor, who's a very dynamic running back. Pete, especially as an alum, was nervous about those guys potentially hitting the transfer portal, and I told them to not really worry about that because they've turned down previous NIL offers over years to come to Minnesota or to stay at Minnesota. And they showed late last week that, you know, in back-to-back tweets that they were, quote, not going anywhere. And they were plugging a NIL app based out of Minnesota here to kind of continually support the program. They had great success a year ago in retaining pretty much all of their starters outside of Ethan Calliope-Manis, who they, you know, said that they were going to bring in a QB1 for him to compete with, and he said, no thanks, I'll go be QB1 at Rutgers. And they retained, I think, 15 out of 16 outside of Ethan. And this year they haven't had any defections as of right now. And that's the key players. Obviously there are smaller role players that have left and might be going to lower level schools or looking for an opportunity at the same level. But no key contributors yet. And PJ told me 2 weeks ago that he felt really good about how they were going to be able to retain players. Now, obviously, this is a perpetual thing, right? The transfer window is open for a couple more weeks here. There's talk of there's not maybe as many people in the portal right now because the second NIL payment for the month is yet to cash at their current school. So they're going to wait till they can make that cash that check before they enter the portal. And now, oh, by the way, there's another transfer portal in April. So it's just a perpetual cycle here that they're always going to have to be, you know, recruiting, re-recruiting their own guys, and that's just kind of the nature of college football these days. Substantial money to say to guys, hey, we'll pay you, let's say, $300,000 to stay in Minnesota. That's real money, right? Mm-hmm. And I also think that the way PJ does his program is he always talks about it as, quote, a life program, not just a football program, that it's about more than just football here. It's about relationships and social life and those different things. So I think if you come to this school in Minnesota for those other reasons, you're more likely to stay because those reasons are part of the kind of calculus and why you came here in the first place.
Andy Greeter joining us on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline here on WCCO. Matthew Collar in for Henry Lake. I'm just curious about your perspective covering this up close about the whole landscape of college football and where all this, like what the impacts have been, because what I initially thought was, oh, great, this means that Bama is never going to lose a game ever again. They're just going to pay everybody and their boosters are going to pay everybody. And then there's, you know, that has not been the case. In fact, it feels like there's more parity in college football. We're going into this 12-team playoff. I don't know if you think, you know, who win. I don't know who's going to win, right? I mean, Oregon earlier this year almost lost to Boise State. I feel like anybody could win now. And the fact that it didn't crush the Gophers, I almost wonder if it's helping spread out some of the talent because kids aren't just trying to go to the best program and live there for 5 years and develop over a couple of years. They're trying to find places where they can play and build out their own local legacies with that team there. And it's created a little more parity?
Yeah, I think there's been kind of a climbing of the ladder as well, right? Obviously, the Gophers were scared of Ariate Ursary, their left tackle, who was all Big Ten, a Big Ten offensive lineman of the year this year, looking at some of the paydays he could get elsewhere and jumping ship to one of the, you know, helmet schools. Mm-hmm. Now, that was the Gophers' concern. The concern for FCS schools is all our best players are trying to climb up to the Power Five, Power Four. And that's where I think the Gophers have won at times, right? You look at Max Brosmer, FCS guy. You look at Ethan Robinson, who was a very good cornerback for them here this year. You look at Jack Henderson, another nickelback of theirs. All three of those guys are FCS-level players who are coming to the Big Ten and have no resources, you know, no training table, no opportunity to get a meal, much less an NIL payday. So you're getting a kind of a funneling up, a climbing of the ladder of talented players that are looking at the transfer portal and saying, hey, I did really well at the FCS level. Maybe I can make it to the Big Ten. And that's where the Gophers have found success to be able to hang with, you know, the Penn States of the world.
Yeah, I mean, I think that PJ, we didn't know how he was going to kind of navigate this because nobody knew how any coach was going to navigate this, has done a pretty remarkable job with it and set them up to continue to be competitive if they can, of course, find their next quarterback. Do you want to talk about Gopher basketball? Should we just end it? Should we just say, like, hey, great catching up, bro. Hope you have a good holiday, and we'll catch you later. We could do, like, an on-air dap and just move on. Or do you want – what do you want to say? It's just not great.
Let's poke the scab. How do you want to go? How do you want to do this?
Okay, so how do they not be this way?
Is there
some path? I mean, it just seems like they're stuck in neutral here.
Yeah, I mean, you want to talk about how the Gopher football team has been able to benefit from the transfer portal. The Gopher basketball team has been, you know, almost eviscerated by the transfer portal, right? Obviously, they kept Dawson Garcia, who, you know, I think got around $600,000 to stay in Minnesota, was turning down $1 million from other programs. And other players on that team last year, Pharrell Payne, Elijah Hawkins, were getting either equal money to Dawson Garcia or more from Texas Tech and Texas A&M. And the Gophers were like, well, we can't afford that. We're paying our best player that much. So if you can get more than that from elsewhere, well, then there's nothing we can do about it. Now, those are two very talented players who were part of a team that, you know, almost made the NCAA tournament, made a little bit of a run in the NIT, who Tom Izzo said if they all come back with Cam Christie, who went to the NBA, they could have a team that could contend for the Big Ten championship. Now, Cam goes to the NBA. Those two other guys go to Texas schools. And it's looking a lot different because of the guys that they brought in have not been able to live up to the same level. And I think what the most alarming thing is not just not being able to hit on players, but in their last two games against Michigan State and Indiana last night, is there's just a lack of execution. Mm-hmm. There's a lack of hustle. There's a lack of commitment. And I think you saw it in Michigan State and Ben addressed it after that, and then to see it duplicate again last night, I think that's why you saw, you know, Ben reportedly staying in the locker room for 40 minutes after the game and really challenging his guys, because there's a standard of how you should do it, even if you're not physically able to do it. And that's where I think the biggest problem is with them right now.
Well, and if they don't get it turned in any sort of direction, because right now it's just sinking, but then you know, you're talking about going back to Patino and they move on from him and then bringing another coach and that doesn't work. Yeah. And then it starts to feel hopeless. And we're in a great state for basketball and it just feels wrong that this program cannot get anything going. But I will say, though, you crush it on Twitter when you cover these games. You are a very, very detailed and entertaining follow on Twitter, at Andy Greeter on Twitter, covering all the Gophers football, basketball, and maybe you'll get to have some good mayo when you go down to cover that game, the Duke's Mayo Bowl. Andy, I appreciate your time, man. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It was great to connect with you again, and happy holidays.
Yep, happy holidays to you, Andy Greeter. Oops, I turned myself off there. I went into producer mode as if I needed to drop the call, but that's Chris Tubbs' job, not mine. So I just turned my own mic off. Anyway, Andy, no, I mean it. Andy is a really good follow on Twitter, so I don't have to watch those men's basketball games, and I still know what's going on. It's been tough, but I really do feel like it was a good year for the Gopher program because it was going to either go, they can't handle it, they can't swim with the big boys, or they can, and they proved that they could. All right, I'm doing a thing. I did it last year. I'm doing it again. It's called No Box Christmas. I'll tell you about it when I come back. Matthew Collar in for Henry Lake. Okay, here's what No Box Christmas is. I have family on both coasts, the wife and I. And last year we decided that we're just not shipping stuff to each other. And I'm not trying to harm the economy here, okay? So all you capitalist lovers, capitalism lovers, don't be mad at me. But we decided that tracking a bunch of boxes and buying a million things online to ship to the family members was just not worth it. It was too much frustration, too much text messages. Did you get it? What, I need the list from you. Did you get her something? Did you get him something? So what we decided to do was to just get really nice Christmas cards for each other, write nice messages, and send them in the United States mail. And then spend the money on ourselves. I went and bought an electric guitar. It's my 8th electric guitar, and I am very happy about it. So that's what we did. No Box Christmas. Hockey Talk coming up next.